Don't pull over. Just turn the volume up. It's time for Roll Call with Chief Brian Dugan. We're calling out those who are bridging the gap to improve the lives and safety of others. Here now is your host, Campus Top Cop, Brian Dugan.
Hello, everyone. It's Brian Dugan, your Chief of Police. Today, I have Robert Blunt with me. And, you know, throughout the month of June, we're going to be featuring our 2018 Community Investment Grant recipients on the show. This is a grant-funded program that's done through our Seize Drug Money, which is the Law Enforcement Trust Fund. And the philosophy behind it is we take some bad money from some drug dealers and things and criminal enterprises, and we put that bad money to good use in our community. It's, you know, it's exciting for us to be able to offer these grants again this year to nonprofit organizations that are helping our Tampa residents. Today in Roll Call, we have Robert Blunt. Robert serves as the director of Ready for Work Hillsboro program, and how the Community Investment Grant has helped his organization. You know, it's really exciting for us to be able to do this. You know, last year we awarded $5,000 in the investment grant to the Ready for Work program to help ex-offenders re-enter the workforce. Good afternoon, Robert. Can you tell us a little bit about the mission of the Ready for Work program and how it started here in Tampa?
Absolutely. Chief Dugan, first of all, thank you for having me on today. And certainly thank you for investing in this great work. The Ready for Work Hillsboro program is actually a replication of a nationally acclaimed Ready for Work program that started up in Jacksonville by Operation New Hope. And we were the first replication here in Hillsboro County. And thanks to some seed money from the county, we were able to get that program up and going in September of 2014. So we're not quite 5 years into it, but it is a very comprehensive reentry program that addresses everything from substance abuse, mental health, housing, transportation, to career development with life management skills and employability skills training.
Okay, and your clients that are part of the program, how do they, where do they come from? How do they end up in your program, that type of thing?
Well, this is the Ready for Work Hillsboro program at this point is primarily funded through a state appropriation. And so our clients are coming from state prisons. Part of the criteria is they must be either released from a state prison within the last 3 years, or on some type of felony community supervision. And so we recruit in numerous ways. We're always in the prison every week at Polk Correctional Institution, which is a transition center as well. And then we also get data from Florida Department of Corrections. So we will send written communication to those who are short on their time and returning back to Hillsborough County. And then we also go into the probation offices each week, and we have sort of a rotating schedule, and we will have an opportunity to engage and interact with individuals that way. We also have, actually, through the City of Tampa, CDBG funds where we can work with individuals who are coming out of the county jails. And those individuals, they just, you know, if they're coming out of the county jail, then they must reside within the City of Tampa, and then they too could qualify for the Ready for Work Hillsboro program.
Yeah, you know, I thought when we originally got the application, you know, from A. Brown Ministries and the Ready for Work program, I thought it was very interesting, you know, for the police department to kind of, you know, help people getting out of prison get back on their feet. And I thought, I don't know what the right word is. I don't know if it's ironic or I'm not sure what the right word is, but I think it's really kind of cool to be able to that we enterprises kind of help, to flat out help people who are trying to get out of a pattern of crime and get back on their feet again. So I thought it was just a really, you know, cool thing for us to be able to partner together and do something like that. Because, you know, there's estimated about 2,000 offenders return to Hillsborough County every year. I looked at it more of it's in the best interest of the police department to help these people get out of that pattern and get back on their feet so that we don't have to rearrest them. Everybody wins when we're making less arrests and there's less crime in our community. And so it was just a tremendous opportunity. And, you know, I'd like to thank you for what you do and for even applying to allow us to be part of it, because what started out as a way for us to help others, you know, it really kind of helped us too, if that makes sense. I think people looked at the Tampa Police Department in a different light when we end up partnering with you guys. And it was just really interesting for us.
Sure. I mean, it's an anomaly when you look at this type of partnership, but at the same time, I think it's the very thing that needs to take place. I think the dialogue, the partnership, investment as well, it's just a win-win for the community, because when we can prevent someone from one, just returning to prison, but two, reoffending, that's one less victim, you know, that's one less situation that we have to expend, you know, TPD resources on to go and investigate. So it's a win-win all the way around.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And I think the mentality of law enforcement has changed a lot. I know for me, I've been doing this for 29 years. You know, when I first came on, you kind of looked out of, you know, the people that are being released. You kind of looked at them with that stink eye, you know, kind of wondering different things. And I'm sure there's still some of that stigma that happens. But I think as police, we now kind of look at, well, maybe we can help them get back on their feet so we're not dealing with them, as opposed to trying to catch them. Maybe let's try and help them.
Right.
And so it's really interesting. So when, you know, in your experience of doing this, and, you know, what are some of the challenges that, you know, people face when they're reentering society, and, you know, how is the program able to help them overcome those obstacles? So let's go. What are the obstacles, and then what work do you do on trying to get to help them overcome it?
Well, I have been with A. Brown Ministries. I'm in my 19th year.
Wow.
And I've never gone into a prison and met someone who was on their way out, and they were excited about committing their next crime. I just haven't seen it. Typically, what we see is someone who is afraid. Very, very fearful. I've even had an individual to tell me that, listen, every day I'm out in the community is a bill for me, and I don't know how I'm going to pay that bill. I don't have any bills in here. And so it's sort of that institutionalization of, you know, maybe I'm better off here than, you know, fighting a good fight out there in order to be self-sufficient. And so, you know, for us, it really is, we call this work reentry. But it's really not anything, you know, it's really starting from square one,
mm-hmm.
and helping individuals to develop a new perspective, a new outlook, new skills, understand workplace environment, the do's, the don'ts, how to carry yourself in a professional manner. Our founder, the late Reverend Abraham Brown, who was a pillar in this community, he used to say, we take people who have made bad decisions, we put them in a place where they make no decisions, and then send them home and expect them to make good decisions.
Wow. That I'll tell you what, that sums it all up. It really does.
And that just doesn't happen without, you know, having individuals who can come alongside you and help you to navigate that path in the community. So, you know, the challenges are real. Some people think, well, you just get a job and, you know, voila, you got it made. And the truth of the matter is, we can help you get a job, but if you don't know where you're going to sleep at night, and you don't know how you're going to get there, or you're struggling with substance abuse, or you're struggling with mental health issues, or both, you're probably not going to keep that job very long. So we try to mitigate all of those issues so that we can stabilize an individual and prepare them to, you know, get a job, get a better job, and get a life. And that's in essence what we're trying to do. In addition to transportation, which I think, you know, everybody is aware of, affordable, attainable housing for this population is huge as well. That's a big challenge for us.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And you know, you hit on something that really strikes a chord with me, and it's the substance abuse and the mental health issues. You know, I see those two items there as my role as chief of police. I see that as two of the biggest pressing issues of our society.
Yes.
I see a lot of people who end up in situations because of those two, of mental health and substance abuse, that if they didn't have those underlying issues, they probably wouldn't make some of the decisions they make and end up in bad situations. And,
sure.
I always say that a lot of people, they make bad decisions. They're not necessarily bad people.
Right.
And I think it, as a society, we tend to be very judgmental. And that is something, I'll be 53 in November. I've been a cop for 29 years. And that is something I've had to work on, is trying not to be so judgmental of others, that you never really know. You know, you see someone, they seem grumpy and grouchy, and you just don't know where they came from.
Right.
You know, they just 5 minutes ago, they may have gotten some really bad news. And we tend to not really want to walk in someone else's shoes.
Right.
And I think in your role, you probably have learned not to be so judgmental because of all the things that you see.
It's amazing, because some of the clients who come in, you know, we might think, oh, man, you know, this individual is going to struggle. They're not going to, they may not make it. And then, you know, some of those who we feel like, oh, this is a home run, fall off the apple cart, right? So it really is tough. One of the things I have learned, though, is that, you can't grow weary in well-doing. You really have to persevere with this, because you can get attached to individuals and you can see progress. And just as quick as they've, you know, taken a step forward, they can take two steps back, right? So so it is a challenge, and that's why for us it really is more about relationship. I mean, we talk to our staff all the time about establishing rapport with clients, establishing that relationship, and being accessible to clients so that, you know, if we do that well, hopefully we can see when a client is leaning, you know, towards getting off the right path. You talk about the substance abuse and the mental health piece, and those are extremely important, particularly when it comes to the Ready for Work Hillsborough program. Our ultimate goal is to help individuals returning to the community after incarceration to get a job, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a team of people who are out, you know, basically selling the Ready for Work Hillsborough program. And our value proposition to an employer is that we're going to send you someone who is well vetted, and we will vet them from the time they come and enroll in the program all the way through, a well vetted, qualified candidate. So we're going to look at their work experience, even their work experience in prison, translate that to real job opportunities here in the community, a well vetted, qualified candidate who can add value to your business and be drug free.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I thank the department, because the community investment funds for us helped us to purchase background screens. So we need to understand what's in this individual's background, not only what they disclose, but everything else that we can discover,
mm-hmm.
because that's what the employer might see. And we need to be able to advocate on that client's behalf. The substance abuse, the funds went to help us with drug screens. If you are not clean, you cannot enroll in the program. Now, you can get clean and come back, but we need you to be clean as you enter. And then we do randomized drug screens as well, because, again, we have to keep our value promise to the employer that you'll be drug free. And then the other piece of that is employers sort of want to know basic literacy of our clients. And so part of that funding went to help fund the Wonderlic test, which we administer to our clients as well. And it's not a pass or fail. It really is more of an assessment and just understanding where individuals are from a literacy and arithmetic standpoint of view.
Okay. You know what? We're getting ready to take a break. I'd like to talk a little bit about the background checks and the Wonderlic test. So if we have anyone that's interested in calling in, our number is 347-989-0030. It's 347-989-0030. We're at Roll Call with the Chief, and we'll be taking a break and right now.
Do you have a child or loved one who has a disability? Register today for the Tampa Police Department's Help Us, Help You Special Needs Registry. Participation is free. 100% voluntary, and completely confidential. Tampa police officers and firefighters responding to a call at your home will have access to the information you provide. This lets first responders know if there is a person inside of a home with a limited ability to communicate. Help Us Help You reduces the possibility of misunderstandings and added stress for children and adults with disabilities when they come in contact with first responders. This free service is available to City of Tampa residents and applies to the address where the individual with special needs resides. Visit tampagov.net/police and click on the special needs registry on the left to learn more. Register today to help us help you keep your family safe.
Okay, and we are back. You're listening with Roll Call with the Chief, your host, Brian Dugan. And I'm here with Robert Blunt, the director of Ready for Work Hillsborough program. He is one of our 2018 Community Investment Grant recipients. And so we were talking right before the break. You brought up the background checks and the Wunderlich test. And I kind of want to get into that. So the background checks, I'm guessing if you could give me some insight, you kind of look and see what a potential employer is going to find in someone's background. And then what do you do with that information? Is there like coaching involved so that, you know, maybe they can explain, you know, a lot of times people look at our background, you know, I went through it with the police department and you'll have an incident and they're like, well, we heard this about you. Can you explain that? And let me explain what happened there. Right. So is that kind of what it is? Some coaching that kind of give them the coping skills to maybe explain some of the awkward situations of their past?
So there are several things that go into that. On our intake questionnaire, we ask the question about what's in your background. So some of it may be self-disclosed. But then we also ask, do you have any charges outside of Hillsborough County? What other counties do you have charges? And for us, it is about understanding what's there. So we can pull Hillsborough County, local counties. But then we go through a service to pull a comprehensive background. One, so that we can understand what's there, and two, just as you said, so that we can coach individuals. So we have what we call a background workshop where we will hand someone their full rap sheet, and we will go through that with them so that they, too, know what's there. And employers are very, very savvy. Employers ask the background question in various ways. Some say, have you ever been convicted of a felony? Some say, have you ever been arrested? Some say within 7 years, 10 years. And so we talk about those scenarios, help our clients to understand what's a misdemeanor, what's a felony, look at the time frame so that they can understand, one, how the question is asked, and two, the appropriate way to disclose that information and answer that question given the scenario. So, you know, that background screen really serves multiple purposes for us as well as the client, because sometimes not only do employers not understand what they're looking at with a background screen. So, for example, you might have one situation that has multiple charges. You know, an employer is looking at this and saying, oh, my God, this person is just, you know, a multiple habitual bad person. Right. It was one incident.
Right. Right.
It was one incident. Right. So, again, the education and awareness for the employer, the education and awareness for the client so that they can understand what's there. And then, of course, obviously for us to understand so that we can advocate appropriately.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that because, believe it or not, we go through that a lot here at the police department with some of our applicants that want to be police officers that maybe got in trouble as a juvenile or something like that. The charges were dismissed or whatever. You can still be a police officer even if you've had some minor things in your background, especially if it never ended in a formal charge or a adjudication of guilt or anything like that. And you have, especially when where it gets kind of tricky, and that's why I'm interested in the fact that you're teaching them how to answer, because some of our own applicants don't always answer. You know, they think one thing, but what happened was something different, especially if, like, you were a juvenile and you were given a notice to appear. They would say, you know, have you ever been arrested? Their answer would be no. Well, if you were given a notice to appear, you technically have been arrested.
Right.
So, right. You know, and then next thing you know, 3 years later, oh, you lied on your application, you know, or it's an immediate disqualifier if you're lied. And sometimes we have to go back and just kind of interview them and kind of sift through all that
right.
stuff. So it's interesting. Now, the Wunderlich test, the reason I bring that up is because I'm a big sports guy, big fan of sports. Didn't say I was good at sports. I'm a big fan of it. And so the Wunderlich test is something that happens. It always comes up at the NFL draft. And I'm intrigued by it because, in my personal opinion, we hold our athletes to a much higher standard than what they probably should be held to.
Mm-hmm.
They're athletes. They're not trying to cure cancer.
Right.
You know, so this Wunderlich score comes up all the time, and I'm like, okay, but can he play football?
Right.
You know, and that's the way I look at it. I think that's the way maybe some of the NFL talent scouts look at it. But what is the Wunderlich test?
So the Wunderlich test really looks at, basic aptitude. It's sort of an aptitude test, basic arithmetic, adding, subtracting, addition, multiplication, division, all of those types of things, which, you know, for example, in the construction industry, they want to know that. They also want to know, you know, can an individual read a ruler,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's some of the basic things like that, you know, reading, comprehension, grammar. So back to the sports analogy, I would imagine that there are some offensive coordinators, especially out there, who are particularly interested in this Wunderlich test because are they going to be able to understand my playbook?
Right.
Right. Are they going to be able to understand where they need to be, when they need to be there, my signals, my codes, and that type of thing. So it really is more so just to give a gauge of, you know, a person's reading level, a person's arithmetic level. And again, when employers ask, as advocates, we need to readily have that type of information available to them to give them that kind of insight.
Yeah, no, you know, it's there's no doubt. And I hope that people also, though, don't put too much on test scores.
Oh, I agree.
Because,
I'm
you know, yeah, you know, if people cared about test scores, I wouldn't be chief of police. You know, and I always go back to Deion Sanders at the NFL draft combine. I don't know if you remember, but you know, they have all these different things that these guys do, whether they can jump, how high they can jump and everything. Deion ran a 40-yard dash and just kept on running off the field and never did anything else. And it was, look how fast I am.
Right.
You know, I think he made 10 tackles entire career because he was a cover guy.
Yes.
And he was so fast that if you got past him, he could make up for any mistake.
Sure.
And so the point is I'm not comparing us all to Deion, but if you have some of the intangibles that sometimes people just need to be given an opportunity.
Sure.
And I think that is the key to your program is what you're doing is you're providing them with the foundation to be given an opportunity and to seize that opportunity.
Sure. And one of the things, too, I just want to brag on our staff a little bit. Our career development instructor, he is passionate about education. He spent 30 years in the corporate world working for Raytheon as an engineer, retired, went back to school, got a PhD in education because he's just that passionate about it. And so for him, you know, when he administers the Wunderlich test, it really is about giving individuals an opportunity to do better. So it's not, you know, so much about judging the outcome as much as it is to say, hey, we want to come alongside you. If you want the help, you know, we can connect you to a GED, which many of our clients may not have, a high school diploma. You know, if you want to do better, then we want to come alongside you and help you to improve and make that progress. And I think that just is a reflection of who we are as an organization, trying to make sure that we have people in the right positions for the right reasons, and so that doesn't become a stumbling block for individuals. And again, it's insightful for us because then we know, you know, which employers and how to steer an individual when it comes to that whole placement piece.
Yeah, no, and I think that that's very important, you know, and a lot of times what I'll look at people is not so much upon, you know, did they meet the basic criteria of the test scores
right.
on paper, but do they have the ability to learn? And do they have the passion to do
Correct.
Better and the passion to learn and all that stuff? And I think that's very important. And you know, and I think the other thing is, you know, I'm big on that opportunity because, you know, the summer will be 2 years that I've been the chief of police, and I never really
yeah.
expected to be chief. It just kind of happened and worked out for me, and I'm honored and thrilled to be chief. But there were some things that took place that gave me the opportunity to prove myself as being a worthy candidate of being the chief. And I think that's what is so important, is that you're providing that, like I said, that foundation to provide them with an opportunity. And so many times I look at people when we hire them is not so much where they're at now,
right.
but where can they go and what can they be. I don't want to be judged as a chief the way I was 2 years ago. Hopefully I'm much better.
Right.
I don't want to be judged the way I was in 1990 when I came on. And had hair and less of a gut, you know, and, you know, but I think it's important that, you know, we give people the opportunity to grow and we judge them from where they're at to where they can be instead of what they used to be.
Right.
You know, because I think, you know, we all look back in our lives and there's some things that we're not always had our shining moments, so
Correct.
To speak.
And those aren't the things that we want to be remembered for, you know.
Right.
And so,
right.
For our clients, you know, nobody wants to be remembered for the biggest mistake or the worst decision that you've ever made. And so some of it really is restoring that confidence, self-confidence in our clients as well.
Yeah. No, and I think, you know what, that pretty much sums it all up in life, that nobody wants to be remembered for your biggest mistake,
right.
you know, and that's, it's, you know, I learned so much in this podcast and sitting down with people, and the two things of the last 30 minutes is what you talked about with Abe Brown saying, you know, someone who doesn't make good decisions and putting them in a place where they're not allowed to make a decision and then expecting them to go out and make good decisions. And it was very telling. And then just like what you said is we don't want to be judged about our worst moment in life. You know, and that's very interesting. I learned so much on this. So, you know, we're getting ready to close things up here. So what do you think, what's the biggest impact you think that the grant that you won had on your Ready for Work program?
The biggest impact is there are certain things that our state appropriation did not cover. Those three items.
Mm-hmm.
Were three of those things.
Okay. Well, there you go.
So you certainly filled a gap for us. And as a nonprofit, you know, it's just a challenge to raise money for this work. To be
it really
frank
is.
With you.
It really is.
You know, nobody wants to sit around the dinner table and say, oh yeah, you know, I just gave $50,000 to help ex-convicts.
Right.
You did what?
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, a little bit goes a long way. That helped to fill a gap. And again, it really helps us to be able to do our due diligence so that we can keep our value promise to our employers as well. And at the end of the day, you know, we're reducing recidivism. We're making, you know, our community safer because our clients do not go out and reoffend at the same rate that they do when they don't have that help. So that's one less victim that we have in our community.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt that it really gives back to the community in so many different ways. You know, I've seen some of your clients go and help some of our younger kids, you know, and try and guide them, you know, to get out of that path
sure.
of trouble, you know, and not follow in those footsteps. So it's really been interesting. So, you know, Robert, I appreciate you coming in today. We are beginning to close out the show. I want to let everyone know that the application period for the 2019 Community Investment Grant has started June 3rd and it closes July 31st. Please feel free to log on to our website at tampagov.net/police. The past recipients can reapply, but qualifications will slightly be different. You know, I encourage everybody to apply for it. And you can tell you it's not an easy decision as to who we're going to give it to. And I can tell you for us, it's been very rewarding. And I appreciate all that you do for our community, and I appreciate you coming in today. I appreciate, we're going to be picking some other people soon, and please go ahead and apply. Next week's guest, we will have, that's a good question who we're going to have next week. So we will have another recipient on the program next week. And until then, let's be careful out there.
Roll Call with Chief Brian Dugan is directed and produced by Janelle McGregor, with technical assistance provided by Eddie Durkin, Steve Haggerty, and Derek Lang. Keep the conversation going on social media, following @TampaPD on Facebook and Twitter, and use the hashtag Roll Call.